Hi, this is Steve Nerlich.
Why cheap astronomy?
Yeah, why? And this is Dear Cheap Astronomy, episode 140, Objects and Objectives. At the end of the day, space is mostly space, and most of the interest in it is about the objects it contains. Currently, there's a lot of interest in interstellar objects, but it's also worth considering what contribution our own solar system makes to that interstellar population. Dear Cheap Astronomy, how often does the solar system capture or eject things? The first evidence that stellar systems might eject things came from observations of rogue planets which had been knocked out of their systems due to gravitational interactions and now populate interstellar space. We suspect that for every rogue planet knocked out of its system, there are likely thousands of smaller objects also knocked out that are just too small for us to observe. We call this rogue population of large and small objects interstellar objects. Since the solar system is constantly on the move, circling the galaxy, there is a reasonable likelihood that it will regularly intersect the paths of interstellar objects. There's a very small likelihood of intersecting a rogue planet, but thousands of times more likelihood of intersecting smaller interstellar objects. So, in a nutshell, there's always been a general assumption that the solar system is regularly visited by interstellar objects. The first clear evidence of this was Oumuamua, first detected in 2017, an interstellar asteroid which had already come in and curved around the Sun. We only noticed it when it was on its way out again. It's really its velocity that gave it away as an interstellar object. That is, it was moving so fast that it was clearly going to achieve escape velocity from the Sun, and tracking its trajectory back, we're confident it must have come from outside the solar system initially. Since Oumuamua, we've also identified an interstellar comet called Borisov, which was also observed just passing through in 2019. We've also had an alleged interstellar meteor known as the Manus Island Fireball, which crashed to Earth in 2014, subsequent analysis suggesting a high likelihood that it had also been moving too fast to have been in a bound orbit around the Sun. So this is the extent of our understanding right now. We've long thought that the solar system was visited by interstellar objects, and just within the last decade, we've started spotting them. Our observations are just based on velocities, though. It's possible, if not likely, that the solar system has actually captured some interstellar objects that have come screaming in but then been slowed through gravitational interactions with solar system objects so that those interstellar objects ended up adopting a solar orbit. However, at the moment, it's unlikely we could distinguish a long-captured interstellar object from a native solar system object. What we need to do is to actually observe such a capture event, or otherwise get some up-close data on interstellar objects that are just passing through, so that we can start identifying any distinguishing characteristics they may have, and then go and look for those distinguishing characteristics on objects that are now captured in solar orbit. This would be a bit like finding a needle in a haystack, but we might get lucky. There is also the matter of things being ejected from the solar system and then becoming interstellar objects. Here we've made observations of comets heading outwards at solar system escape velocities, and tracking their trajectories back, it seems likely they were accelerated up to escape velocity after passing close to a giant planet. The first such observation was comet C-1980E1, also known as Comet Bau, which is thought to have gained acceleration from Jupiter back in 1980, and this year we observed that comet C-2024L5 appears to have been accelerated to escape velocity after interacting with Saturn. Journalists are wont to use words like flung or hurled, as though these objects had been loaded up in a cannon, but in reality both were long-period comets that already had solar orbital velocities that were almost but not quite escape velocities. So their interaction with the giant planets, where they got temporarily pulled into the planet's gravitational fields, hence picking up some of those planets' orbital velocity around the Sun, and from there the comets continued on with that small addition to their prior velocity, which was just enough to give them proper escape velocities. So, neither has really been shot out of the solar system. Comet Bal had only passed Neptune's orbit in 1995, and Comet C-24L5 won't finish its curve around the Sun until next year. It got its boost from Saturn on the way in. There's almost certainly been a number of asteroids the solar system has ejected as well. They're just a lot harder to observe.
This is the middle bit.
So that's the interstellar object story. But what about our own stellar population of objects? Regular listeners will be aware that Cheap Astronomy wants to crash a lot of them onto the moon. But what other ideas are out there? Dear Cheap Astronomy, what else is going on in the asteroid mining space? Well, good question. There have been a number of attempts to create an asteroid mining industry, despite the obvious lack of access or technological solutions. Such attempts, or startups, have been largely built on venture capital. That is, the support of investors willing to take a gamble on investing in a venture that's unlikely to deliver a profit anytime soon. Asteroid mining was a focus of the high-profile deep space industry startup launched in 2013, which developed various ideas for utilization of off-world resources, including designs for purpose-built spacecraft and an orbiting platform for the collection and processing of off-world water for rocket fuel production. But nothing ever got off the ground, and the venture, largely a think tank, was bought out in 2019. Another well-known startup, Planetary Resources, launched in 2012, made a bigger thing of asteroid mining, establishing a conceptual pathway based on implementing space telescopes, which would initially be put into Earth orbit and then later roam interplanetary space to gain close-up views of asteroids for prospecting purposes. They did get as far as launching a couple of demonstration CubeSats, which successfully detected heat and water sources remotely. Nice. A more recent and still operating high-profile venture is AstroForge, which thinks that chasing water is probably not the best idea at this point in history. After all, Earth is probably the best source of pure unrefined water in the solar system, and launch costs are steadily going down. So you might start using off-world water when it's needed in large volumes off-world, but it's probably not the best place to start building a space economy. So, AstroForge are firmly focused on finding platinum-rich metals, and possibly cobalt and nickel, in asteroids, running the line that there is a growing demand for these rare metals, for example in battery production, to support the world's movement to clean energy. Furthermore, digging them up off-world is better for Earth's ecosystem, so there's virtue as well as profit to be made. AstroForge's plans are based on prospecting, but also on space-based refining. They have a refining technique, possibly based on vaporizing platinum ore with X-rays to extract pure platinum, a technique they hope to demonstrate on an orbiting CubeSat called Broker 1 in 2023, but had uncertain success due to various in-flight issues. The next step is to do an asteroid flyby with Broker 2, scheduled to launch in October 2024. AstroForge haven't revealed which near-Earth asteroid Broker 2 will visit. It's been described as being within the 100-metre diameter range, and the 100-kilogram Broker 2 spacecraft will take some pictures of that unknown asteroid from about a kilometre out. The lack of detail here is probably something to get used to as private industry gets more involved in space exploration. Assuming the Broker 2 flyby mission happens, it will only take about 11 months to rendezvous with the asteroid, but it's unlikely that Astroforge will release its findings. No point telling everyone you found a gold mine before you can stake a claim, and no point telling everyone you found nothing if you want your investors to keep funding more prospecting. In any case, who knows if they will be able to confirm there's either something or nothing worth mining just from surface images. They could get lucky in sighting a shiny metallic sticky out bit, but otherwise their best bet is to just start building up a database of lots of different asteroid images so they can start identifying surface features that are common to valuable metallic asteroids and not common to other asteroids. And then, once they have a positive ID of a valuable and mineable asteroid, the plan is to return and do something. Astroforge's somewhat mysterious platinum extraction technique can apparently vaporize asteroid material and then somehow manage to separate the good stuff from the dross in microgravity. The asteroid ore presumably has to be in a reasonably granular form for that to work. If you can just scoop up granular ore, well great, but otherwise Astroforge is also planning to trial a space drill on the moon, so maybe all that will come together somehow, sometime.
This is the end bit.
So, there you go. It's possible we really could not only mine but refine ore from asteroids in the microgravity of space if a number of different technologies work out the way that we want them to. Of course, much of the same could be said for the cheap astronomy crash on the moon solution. What's important here is that someone gets on with trying something. But that's it for another episode of Dear Cheap Astronomy. If you've got a space science question, or you just want to refine some ideas of your own, why not write to cheapastro@gmail.com and we'll sift through it all with you. Thanks for listening. Steve Nerlich, Cheap Astronomy.